This is Speaking of Events, the podcast for event industry leaders. We bring together innovators, strategic rock stars, and visionary creatives to talk all about events, industry trends, and anything in between. And speaking of events, here is your host, Carrie Garbus.
Something happens when you meet another musical theater geek. And I am proudly a musical theater geek in many, many ways. And sometimes when you meet another one out there, you get into a conversation and you'll sort of unknowingly or maybe knowingly try to outdo one another and name some obscure musicals that you had the luck of seeing and maybe they didn't. Like some great unknown, something that ran like a really short time, but you actually got to see it. Like you were the unicorn in the audience that got to see this musical live. And I've got a few of those in my past. And one that I personally, when I meet another musical theater lover, and one that I like to throw down is that, and I'm going to totally age myself, is that I saw the out of town trial of a musical called Grind in Baltimore, where I grew up in the late, I think it was 89, like 88, 89. So this was a musical. I don't know if my guest even knows what this is. Maybe I'm already.
No,
I'm already winning. I'm already winning this competition.
You won guest zero.
So this, well, let me tell you about it, guest. This musical was directed by Hal Prince.
Oh, and of course. Okay.
It was he had like a little string of flops in the 80s. Anyway, Ben Vereen was in this musical, and I'm seeing the out of town trial in Baltimore. I'm there with my dad, and something goes wrong on the stage. Like it was that time that people were doing a lot of like rotating pieces on the stage and hydraulics were probably not super great. something breaks and the show stops and they're like, ladies and gentlemen, we have to stop the show to fix the set. And so out comes Ben Vereen to entertain the audience while the show is stopped. And he's singing songs and he's making jokes and the show wasn't very good. And so like a bunch of people left while the set was broken because it was kind of a snoozer anyway. And because I'm such a diehard geek fan, I was like, I was with my dad. I'm like, Dad, we have to stay. Stayed in that seat just really for moments like this so I can embarrass my podcast guests, whatever, 25 years later, whatever it is. So
still talking about Grind by Harold Prince, right?
Exactly. You're going to look it up after this. Anyway.
I'm absolutely going to look it. I'm almost tempted to look it up right now, but I feel like that might not be
professional. Look, I've got 30 more seconds of the story and then I swear it has a point with your name in it. I promise. Anyway. So now 10 years later, I'm at Madison Square Garden. I'm watching A Christmas Carol that year featuring guess who? Ben Vereen. So we're watching the show and guess what? Part of the set breaks and they stop the show. And they're like, ladies and gentlemen, we're stopping the show. Right? So Ben Vereen comes out again. And I'm like, oh, he's going to sing songs and tell jokes. This is what he does. Sure enough, comes out, sings songs, tell jokes. So my question to you is, coincidence or pattern?
Oh my God. So that was so strange. As soon as you said that, I'm thinking to myself, I'm thinking maybe Ben has like some ulterior motive here. I think he is looking to be discovered as maybe like, you know, some sort of a comedian or, you know, an off the cuff performer that can get hot. Like he's, I feel like Ben maybe is trying to get out of the musical theater world in a way. And this is sort of like his outlet for doing that.
Maybe he was feeling too locked into these roles and decided.
That seems little too random for me. I don't know about that. Yeah, I question Ben's motives.
Exactly. Well, you heard it here first from my very special guest, who, by the way, absolutely can throw down in terms of musical theater geekiness, because we did it on our prep call. He held his own, trust me, and clearly can hang out for a good 5-minute story before I even introduce him. So we know that we're going to have a good conversation as we hang, because actually we're not going to talk about musical theater. We're going to speak about events because that's what we do. And I'm so pleased to welcome the very impressive in many, many ways, as you'll discover, Jim Klapes, Director of Events at M3 Meet. Welcome, Jim.
Well, thank you, Carrie. And I appreciate that very kind introduction. And I was telling Carrie before we were live that I am having my water out of my Ain't Too Proud, The Temptations musical cup that I acquired, which when I acquired it, it had an alcoholic beverage in it. But I save all of my playbills. I have them about 10 feet away from me. There are probably 70 or so of those. I kid you not. And they are displayed, you know, like coffee table books. And I also keep all of my glasses too. So this is an honor, yes, of our musical theater nerdiness, the two of
and
us.
And you know what? Yes, absolutely. Thank you. And I ain't too proud to ask what's in the cup right now.
It really
nobody knows. Look, Jim,
nobody knows what time it is.
Right?
If I progressively start to like slur my speech, you'll know that I'm lying, that it's not really. No, it really truly is. I promise water. You, it really actually is water in the cup. Yeah.
Okay.
But sure, there have been alcoholic beverages many times in this cup, but not currently, no.
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I suppose we can get to our very first question. And I'm very excited to have this conversation with you, which is, what is the one thing you wished more people knew about events?
Great question. You know, I think what I would probably say in response is I wished that more people understood and knew what it takes to put on an event. You know, I've done this work now for about 18 years or so, which is, I'm kind of dating myself a bit, but I've been in the association world for the majority of that time, working for various nonprofit organizations that are very mission-driven, very goal-oriented, you know, with really dedicated, passionate people. And you find both internally and externally that, you know, this is not rocket science what we do, you know, but it does take a very specific kind of person to do it, and to do it well, and a very, very specific kind of skill set. And a lot of people, I think, attend events, conferences, meetings, and they just sort of are under this impression that the event is, it just kind of put itself together. And I think before I got into the events industry, that was sort of my perception of events too. You don't think about what it takes. You don't think about the planning that goes into it. You don't think about the number of people that are working on the event, the number of vendors that you're contracting and hiring and managing, and the months of logistics that go into sometimes just the smallest of meetings. So I would say that is one thing that I have at least noticed throughout the course of my career that I wish people were a little bit more cognizant of. So all of you out there, the next event that you attend, if you're not to point my finger at anybody, I don't want to come across that way. But you know, I do think that it's important for people to realize the amount of time, the amount of effort that goes into, as I said, planning the smallest of events. They really are, you know, there's a lot of time and effort that it takes. And we work really hard in our profession to make sure that events go as seamlessly as possible. And you know, sometimes you're more successful than others. The one thing that I love about this industry and also don't like about this industry, it's kind of a love-hate, is the fact that there's always going to be something that throws you for a loop. So, you know, you can plan for every contingency, and on site, when you get on the event, you know, when you get to the event, there's always going to be something that throws you. You have to be on your toes constantly in this job. So yeah, it is definitely something that that I see, and I hope that people will be a little bit more cognizant of when they attend events in the future. Just think about all of that work that went into it. It didn't just plan itself.
Right. It's months and months, and starts with an idea that may have gotten balled up and thrown in a trash can and then and resurrected later or something. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not absolutely. Just in that moment of like, oh, I'm going to walk in and sit down at this session and see this person. It is all the other things and the banners and the food and the theme and the experience.
Absolutely. It's in some ways it's, and going back to our sort of musical theater, it's almost like putting on a musical or conducting an opera in some ways, you know, it's very orchestrated. Events are very, very orchestrated, you know, sometimes down to the minute, depending on who you're planning the event for, depending on what your budget is, depending on the number of attendees. So it really is, it's a huge collaboration, often sometimes of hundreds of people, depending on the size of the event.
Wow. Maybe you're drinking coffee. That's exhausting. I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
And one thing, you know, I've shared with you my other than musical theater, my other obsession when it comes to events is, of course, speakers, because right. That's, as you can imagine, that's what we do.
That's your gig. Yeah.
That's the gig. We get the speakers ready. So do you have a speaker disaster story that you're willing to share? I kind of live for those. So anything to share?
I do, and this is probably, unfortunately, it's not going to be maybe as sexy or as meaty as some of the speaker disasters that you've heard from maybe some other guests on your podcast or other event planners, event professionals that you've spoken with. But I worked for many years at a nonprofit organization called the U.S. Green Building Council, which puts on the lead, developed the lead rating system for sustainable building. The annual conference was called Green Build. And at the height of the conference, when I was with the organization from 2005 to 2012, at the height of the Green Build conference, we were just shy of 30,000 attendees, 1,800 exhibitors, $2 million sponsorship program. So it was a beast for sure. And the first, so I had started at USGBC in a different capacity, and I was promoted to the position of manager of conferences and events in 2007. And the first conference that I worked on for Green Build was in Chicago. And it was a very, very big program. I think we ended up with about 23,000 attendees ultimately at that conference. Our keynote speaker was former President Clinton. It was a big deal. It was a big conference. And I was put in charge of managing our master speakers series, which were speakers that were a little bit more renowned within the industry, commanded a little bit more attention. Rooms were set for, you know, more individuals, more attendees, because we were anticipating that there would be more people attending these sessions, which there were. So long story short, I had been working with a speaker and she was a very nervous presenter. It didn't come naturally to her. You could tell she was just a little bit intimidated, I think, by the crowd. I don't know what her background in conference speaking had been, but she wasn't the most comfortable and or natural speaker in the world. And you come across those sometimes. So I had tried to kind of, you know, bridge that gap a little bit and, you know, make sure that she knew that I was there supporting her and, you know, it was going to be great. Everything was going to be terrific. So I had worked with her for a couple of weeks prior, and she had sent over to me several iterations of the presentation that she was going to be giving. And when she showed up on site about 5 minutes before the actual presentation began with 400 plus attendees in the audience, she handed me a new jump drive. And I said, okay, not a problem. So I immediately, you know, went scurried up to our production guys, to the AV team that we were working with, and said, hey, this is the new presentation and we need to make sure that this is uploaded. I know you have three or four iterations of this particular presentation. So she is about to start her presentation and lo and behold, the AV technician puts on the incorrect presentation. And this is already a very, as I said, a very sort of timid, nervous speaker to begin with. She froze in front of this audience of 400 people. And she was, you know, incredibly embarrassed and very uncomfortable. And I felt awful. And she, you know, kind of said, this is the wrong presentation. And you know, I'm kind of, you know, with the AV tech going, no, oh my God. So, you know, he immediately knew what had gone wrong and, you know, put in the right jump drive. You know, this was a big conference with a lot of moving pieces and people were tired and we were there days early setting up, as you know. I mean, this is the way it happens when you're, you know, dealing with a huge industry event. And the whole process probably lasted about 20 seconds, but it felt like about an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got the right presentation uploaded, but she was clearly shaken by the experience. It took her a little while to get her composure back, but she, you know, ultimately was great and spoke very well. But, you know, I was mortified, ran out of the room. There may have been some tears involved. You know, this was much younger in my, this was much earlier in my career. So it was a bit of a speaker disaster, but what I will tell you is I have never made that same mistake again. You know, when you are, and the same situation has occurred, you know, at other organizations that I've worked with, you know, different events, you just have to make sure that you are constantly managing everyone else around you, particularly when it comes to, you know, when you're working with different personalities and when you're gauging the kind of person that you're working with. And I knew that, as I said, that she was not the most comfortable presenter in the world. So as I said, yes, that mistake has not happened again and hopefully will not happen again in the future.
My heart, I got a little bit of an anxiety attack while you told that story.
Believe me, I had an anxiety attack and I think I had some post anxiety attacks.
Some PTSD.
I definitely had some PTSD. Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
Wow.
but I got over it.
Yes. Thank you for those are some good, like massive good takeaways for other event professionals, for the speaker trainers here in the room, for everybody. Absolutely.
Well, and what I didn't tell you, Carrie, was this, and this was my fault, and I'm going to throw myself under the bus, was when I gave him that jump drive, the new jump drive that she had handed to me, I left the room to go and do something else because obviously we were running in different directions.
You're running an event, right?
Exactly. And what I would say is don't ever do that. Make sure that the right presentation is uploaded before you leave the room and get a frantic call in to go back into the room and ensure that the AV and production people have the right presentation. So
yes,
and that was my fault and a mistake I have not made since.
You're a man of admiration. Look at you. Well,
you don't even know me that well. Thank you, gosh.
I know.
And already
that is amazing. That do you, what is the, it might be obvious after the story, the number one thing you wish speakers did?
The number one thing that I wish speakers did, I wish speakers were oftentimes a little bit more prepared.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but shocking. But, you know, that goes for everyone. You know, that's just kind of human nature, unfortunately. And I find that in events too, you know, working with people both internally and externally. And I think we were discussing this last week when we kind of had our introductory call with one another. You know, when you have an event that is a year from now, it's very difficult to get people to focus on it, even though you have really finite deadlines. You know, contracts are due, you know, vendors need to be recruited and solidified, you know, 8-9 months before the event actually takes place. It's hard for people who are outside of the industry to recognize that, to understand it and to realize that, okay, wow, I do need to focus on this, even though it's not coming up for a year. So that kind of, it mirrors, I think, what I wish a lot of speakers did, which is, you know, have presentations available a little bit earlier in advance, agendas, because, you know, it's all about marketing the event, particularly events that, you know, that you're charging for. You know, you want to be able to have speakers confirmed. You want to be able to have a working program that people can refer back to, particularly when you're running educational events for nonprofit associations. You know, it's all about the education for the most part. And, you know, I've worked with organizations who will not be named, you know, which are, you know, putting their program live, their conference program live for, you know, a 2000 person conference 3 weeks to a month in advance. And it's like, that's just not enough time to generate the kind of attendance that we want to have at these events. You've got to have your program up, at least, to me, I think at least 3 months in advance. So when it comes to speakers, just make sure that, and I, you know, it's difficult. And particularly if you're not getting paid an honorarium and, you know, speakers are putting themselves out there and they are taking time away from their families, from their paying jobs, oftentimes to come and speak at a conference. But it's helpful for us as event professionals, conference planners, to get speakers confirmed as soon as possible, just so it can be a mutually beneficial relationship. You know, they can have people in the audience, so they're not talking to, you know, 10 people because we didn't have ample time to market the event. And we also can begin at an earlier stage to really get the word out about the event and make sure that the speaker and or speakers are being promoted as much as possible. So, yeah. You know, it really is kind of a win-win situation when we can figure things out earlier in the yes. process.
Oh, I'm behind you on all of this. Absolutely. Absolutely. So now you're the director of events for M3 Meet. Mm-hmm. I have taken a look at the the client list, at least what M3 Meet shows publicly on the website. And it's what was surprising to me was how...
Stop-dropping?
Yes, exactly.
I'm afraid what you're going to say.
I didn't know what I was going to say, but yes, what was jaw-dropping to me was how diverse the client list was.
Yep.
Just really what they do, where they are, who's working with you. Mm-hmm. And so with all that going on, what's your favorite type of event to work on?
I love that question. And, you know, I like to say that I planned every event aside from a wedding throughout the course of my career thus far, which is really honestly the truth. I've kind of done it all, and I've purposely not done weddings because they kind of terrify me a little bit, you know, the whole bridezilla thing. But I feel like I need to do one just to do one. I like the fun events. You know, I like the receptions and the dinners and the galas and the press conferences. You know, those are the sort of sexy, flashy, glossy events that are always really, really fun for me to plan, because you're typically working, you know, in cool venues and you're working with great, you know, F&B providers and yeah. People are just really amped up at those events, you know. They're fun, and people are there to have a good time and to network. And those are the events that I typically find to be the most enjoyable for me from a planning perspective. You know, unfortunately, I don't have the opportunity to plan those as much as I would like to. You know, a lot of my career has been really, really focused on, you know, conference planning, meeting planning, you know, board meetings, which are fun, but come with a high amount of stress. So it's those fun kind of, you know, it's those fun glossy events that we all like to attend, really. Those are the ones that I like to plan.
Yes, nice. And what, any event trends that you're seeing recently, hearing about, seeing, doing? I know we're in a weird transition time.
Yeah.
We can talk about that too.
Hybrid. I mean, that's the new trend, obviously. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, I was unfortunately laid off from my position. I had started a new job in January of 2020. And then of course, you know, what happened? COVID.
Yes,
and
I
was furloughed from that position in April of 2020, and then ultimately laid off in August. So I was out of work for almost a year. So I kind of missed the whole proliferation of the hybrid event and moving events virtual. I had done virtual events at limited capacity on a limited basis pre-pandemic. I had worked specifically on one large meeting that was run entirely through Zoom. So I had some knowledge about virtual events, but I kind of missed that whole transition in some ways, at least from a professional standpoint. But I do see that as, I don't even know if it would still be a trend. I mean, it seems like it's so 2 years ago now, but right. I do think that it is here to stay. I do not think, even when we get past COVID entirely, which, you know, who knows if we'll ever, you know, honestly be past it in full, but I don't see the hybrid model going anywhere anytime soon. obviously, because for many reasons, and there are a lot of pros to the hybrid model. You know, you're able to engage a lot more people with your event than you would if it was just if you're just having people on site attend. And I think that that's what we've realized, you know, over the course of this pandemic is you are able to pull in so many more points of view. You're able to engage so many more people, get so many more diverse opinions when you extend the opportunity for people to attend an event virtually. So I do see that continuing. And I think it is, we're just kind of on the threshold of it, I think, in some ways.
I love the accessibility for so many, for geographically, for everything. It is, it's exciting. It is this, you felt it hardcore. This industry was devastated. I don't want to say decimated, devastated, right? Hit really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Where do you think we are in terms of recovery?
You know, I think it's been a slow process. You know, it has been incremental, but I think we're coming back very, very strongly. You know, I have been with my current job now for about 10 months, so I'm still fairly new with the organization. And we've only had to postpone one event in the course of that time, in the course of the 10 months that I've been with the company. And it was
great,
which is really good. We had our annual conference last year, which was the end of May of 2021. I had started with the company about 2 weeks prior to that. Their typical attendance at their annual was 1,600 people. We got over 1,000 people in person. This was the first conference that the Roosevelt Hotel in New Orleans had actually had post-COVID. This was the largest group that they had brought back into the hotel. And the fact that we were able to get over 1,000 people on site was really, really tremendous. So, you know, I think we've been coming back for a while. You know, what I talk about with colleagues of mine, what I talk about with people who are not colleagues of mine in the industry, just with friends, is, you know, people are ready to go back and meet in person. There is nothing that can substitute that face-to-face interaction. As much as I'm an advocate for virtual events and hybrid events, I don't get as much out of them. I really, truly don't. I mean, the convenience is nice. The accessibility is nice. I'm able to attend more. It's certainly more inexpensive. But nothing replaces that feeling of being at an on-site conference or meeting. And I think for so long, you know what, for now 2 years, roughly, people have just been really, really anxious to get back to that. So I think we're in a good place. You know, I'm doing 14, 15 small regional meetings this year that I've contracted for. All of them have been contracted. We are holding our annual conference once again in New Orleans at the end of May this year, and I'm expecting us to probably garner at least 1,000 to 1,100 attendees, if not more. I don't know if we'll get back to where this organization was pre-pandemic, which was 1,600, as I mentioned previously. But I think we're at a good place. You know, obviously with the CDC lifting the mask mandate recently, the only thing about this pandemic, obviously, and you know, Carrie, we don't know when the next hit will be, you know, like knock on wood that there's not going to be, you know, that we won't shut down again. There's so much that is undetermined and we really, really don't know what it's going to look like. But right now, as I sit here today, I feel very confident about where we are in the events industry. And I see colleagues of mine who are back in business. People are hiring. I will tell you that. People are hiring in the events world again. And it's very inspiring to see because, you know, initially when COVID hit, I really thought for a hot minute that I was going to have to change. I was going to have to pivot my entire career and do something else. So, you know, luckily I think I'm past that fear, but it's been a hard road, but it's a road that I think there is certainly a light at the end of the tunnel. And I think we are much closer to getting to that light than we were even 6 months ago or so.
Oh, yay. That's inspiring to hear. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. All right. I want to veer a little bit away from profession and go maybe towards what I'm going to call passion.
Ashton, all right.
And this is all about the LGBT plus Meeting Professionals Association.
Oh, you did. You said that great, and it is such a mouthful, but you did that beautifully.
Thank you. I warmed up and rehearsed it. So would you tell us about it? What's the mission? What do you do? What tell us?
Of course. I always get really excited to talk about this association because it's something that is very near and dear to my heart. I've been involved with the organization since the inception back in 2017. And I read meetings today. I read Connect. I read BizBash. I try to keep on top of all of the industry rags and publications that come out. And I was reading an article back in 2017 about this gentleman named David Jeffries, who was a PR and a marketing professional who had worked specifically with the Borgata a lot, big casino / hotel in Atlantic City, and had done a lot of their PR and marketing and had worked with other hospitality chains over the course of his career intermittently, and really saw a void in the industry for LGBT plus meeting professionals. And started this organization that really serves as a platform for their representation. And I was very interested. It was a small article that I read, and I reached out to this guy directly and I said, hey, like, how can I be involved? And I was brought on as a board member. And then ultimately, he asked me to be executive board chair of the organization in 2018, I believe. So this is an organization that is the only association that is representing and serves as a platform, as I said, to both elevate, represent, and empower the LGBT plus meeting professional. So we have a number of ways that we do that. Receptions slash events at many, many of the large industry functions. So we work very closely with MPI, PCMA, Connect. We've had, networking receptions where we are able to connect people, LGBT plus people and allies who are in the meetings and events industry, both planners and suppliers, to talk about shared concerns, to talk about, kind of where they see the industry going, challenges that they've come across in the industry. And we also do a lot with education. So we have podcasts that we do. We do have a podcast called Spin that our current executive board chair, Derek Johnson, created. He talks through the podcast, similar to this, not as much fun, but similar. Just about issues affecting the LGBT meeting professional and how people can plan their meetings in a more inclusive way. And that has been something that I have really been focused on and have spoken at industry conferences, both domestically and internationally about, is how can we get the word out to hospitality professionals, the hotel business, our vendors, other meeting planners, about how they can make sure that their events are more inclusive. So that's a huge component of what we do. Obviously, membership is huge as well. We have many, many opportunities for business membership. Most of our business members up to this point have been convention and visitors bureaus. We have just expanded and we have a number of international business members that have come on board. So the organization has grown tremendously in the 5 years that we've been around. We're over 2,000 professional members. I think we have 70 plus professional business members and supporters, sponsors that we work with. And the organization is continuing to grow. So I definitely encourage everybody to be involved. One of the things that I'm really trying to promote with this organization is I want to make sure that we are practicing what we preach. And I want to make sure that we are engaging folks who are allies and folks who don't even know that they're allies because, right. Like those are the people that need this information more so. They need to hear how they can plan meetings in a more inclusive way. They need to hear about the challenges that LGBT plus meeting professionals feel in their career and how they've attended meetings before where they haven't felt included or where they haven't felt supported. So as I said, a huge component for me is making sure that we are addressing that and we are reaching out to folks throughout the industry and engaging folks throughout the industry, not just the LGBT plus community. So we have a number of ways that we're doing that. And I do encourage everybody to take a look at our website. It's lgbtmpa.com. You can learn about how to become a professional member. If you are a planner, it is free of charge to become a member. And also how we can potentially engage some companies and some corporations within the hospitality community kind of have a mutually beneficial relationship where we're able to bring them on as supporters and promote them to the larger industry.
Oh, I love it. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a really cool organization to be a part of. And I never expected it to sort of get to the place where it is right now. It's been really successful. We were able to ride through the pandemic fairly unscathed, which was a blessing. So I hope that we continue to go nowhere but up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I will be there supporting you 100%.
Thank you. I know you will.
All right, a little bit of a gear again, shifting left, right, I don't know, whichever way, if that wasn't a political statement, I just meant we're going to go on to a different topic. In your bio, you talk about you started professionally with an internship on Capitol Hill.
Mm-hmm,
so my question is, how did you get from there to here?
Yeah, what happened? Well, I realized after my 3-month internship on Capitol Hill that I did not want to be a Hill staffer. I really thought in college, I was a political science major, and I really thought that I wanted to go into politics, and I thought I wanted to work on Capitol Hill, and did an internship there that was very, very rewarding. I'm glad that I did it, but I realized, as I said, after the conclusion of that internship that I just did not want to, that wasn't my path. It was a little bit too cutthroat for me, and it was just not necessarily something that I wanted to pursue. But I loved DC. I fell in love with Washington, DC. I was raised in California and was kind of just ready for a change. So I went back, I graduated college back in Santa Cruz. I went to the University of California, Santa Cruz. And I, through a friend of mine, got a job working with a conference production company, which at the time was called Financial Research Associates. And they produced financial, pharmaceutical, and legal conferences. And my first job out of college was selling their conferences over the phone. So I was a business development associate, and I was reaching out to people and saying, hey, come to this conference. Mainly, I was working in the financial sphere of that company. And after about 3 months, the president of the organization came to me and she said, I like what I'm hearing on the phone from you on a daily basis. I really think that there's a lot of potential. I want to bring you on as a conference director. And I said, sure, absolutely. So I started producing financial conferences. I did a few pharmaceutical, but I was mainly involved in financial conferences. So I was doing speaker recruitment. I was doing content development, really having long, engaging conversations with people over the phone who were educating me about things like hedge funds and things like, investing in China and all of these different, as a political science major that I was like, I have no idea what these people are talking about, but I learned very quickly. And I remember one day, and I truly do remember this. I remember sitting there one day and I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do. Like I was in a very nebulous period after realizing I didn't want to work on the Hill and realized that I was like, this kind of makes sense. I pursued it, and the rest is history.
Yes. So
that's kind of how it started.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
I love that moment of just that everything gets clear. Right?
It was. Everything it was kind of like aligns. A moment of clarity. It was like, oh my gosh, like I think this is meant for me. I think I want to continue doing this. And I did.
Clearly meant for you, with the passion of which you speak, and all the in my humble opinion.
Well, and you talk to a lot of speakers, so I'm going to take your word for that.
A lot of event professionals. Yes. Okay, Jim Klapes, are you ready for the Lightning Express round?
I am. You were so Andy Cohen right there. I thought you were going to do like, what does he do? I'm forgetting what it is on his show.
Oh, yes, plead the fifth.
I thought you were going to ask me to plead the fifth. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay.
That's right.
Yes, I'm ready
show.
For the lightning round.
That's the after show. It's later. Right. It's for, yeah. Okay. So we're going to put 45 seconds on the clock.
All right.
And I'm going to ask you 8 questions. Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay, great. What is your favorite moment in the event process?
When it's done. honestly. Fair. When it's over, you- it's like a lot of ways, just because it's so nice to see the culmination of all of your hard work, especially when it goes well.
Yes, yes. Who do you consider your mentor?
You know, it would be my first vice president at the U.S. Green Building Council. Her name is Kimberly Lewis, and she's just a trip, and I love her, and I learned so much from her. She's Yay. Just, yeah, she's amazing.
Way to go, Kimberly Lewis.
Kimberly nice. Lewis is the best.
Next question, Jim Klapes, ready? Crawfish or crayfish?
Oh, it's crawfish.
Okay.
I've only lived in Louisiana for 10 months.
I know, so, but that's 10 more than me. So that's why I needed to ask the question. Okay.
I have not heard crayfish at all since I've been down here. They all say crawfish. So we're going to go with crawfish.
Okay. What do you do every day? What do you do every day to stay healthy and sane?
Walk. I literally will take a walk outside. So I need to, you know, you got to take breaks. You got to get fresh air. I will take a walk in the morning. I'll take about a mile walk around my office. I have a route. Sometimes I'll mix it up a little bit, and then I'll take a mile walk in the afternoon. So that is literally, I do that on a daily basis. And it, you know, I do meditation and I do yoga, but I don't do them every day. But the walking is something that I do every day, at least five days a week when I'm working. Yeah.
Okay. Fair. What is your favorite Sondheim musical?
Oh, you know what? I think it would probably have to be Sweeney Todd. And I know you love Sweeney Todd too.
I do. I already said it.
I think it is. I don't like A Little Night Music. I'll tell you that. I hope you don't love that one.
Okay. I like you a little less now, but that's okay.
You like me a little. I'm sorry. I should have just shut up.
But I like that Sweeney Todd is on the highest. It's fine. I'm going to forget it. We're going to move on. Maybe I'll edit it out. All right.
But I will say, I just saw West Side Story and I loved the Spielberg remake. It is so, I liked it better than the original, I have to say.
Right. Wow. Yes.
Okay. I also should not have said that, but I did.
You did. It's who you are. Own it. That is who you are.
Yeah.
All right. Number seven. Yep. If you were way over 45 seconds, but I don't really have a clock, so don't worry about it.
I feel like, sorry about that.
It's all right. If you weren't talking to me right now, what would you be doing?
Probably eating lunch.
Okay.
Which is making me hungry.
All right. We're almost done. Number eight. Marie's Crisis or The Duplex?
Oh, God, that's so hard. I don't know. I love them both for different reasons. I would probably say The Duplex. The only thing about Marie's that I don't love is it gets so crowded in there. And especially like
downstairs.
Yes. And if you go in the summer, like in a hot New York summer, and you go to Marie's and it's like just humid and it just can get very uncomfortable. I love them both though, but I would give the slight edge to The Duplex, I think.
Okay. Yeah. This was a throwback to both of our days in New York City. So I had to throw it in there. Thank you, Jim Klapes. You have lived through the Lightning Express round. Congratulations.
Right. Thank you, Carrie. That was fun.
You're very welcome. This brings me to the end of all my questions for you. Is there anything you felt that I have left or you have left on the table that you'll be disappointed if we shut it down and you didn't say it?
You know, the only thing I would say is, and not to get like, you know, super maudlin at all, but I would say that, you know, with the hit that our industry took, and that we're still recovering from, you know, anybody that is listening to the podcast or anybody that is finding themselves, you know, out of work still, who wants to get back into the meetings and events community and or industry, I would say just keep going. Keep applying. There are jobs out there. The industry is coming back. People are hiring. You know, it was a really, really grueling process to be sort of one of the casualties in a sense, not a literal casualty, thankfully, but a casualty of COVID. And I, as I said, for about 10 months, I was very, very concerned that I was going to have to pivot and go into and pursue another career path. So I just, you know, I want to encourage anybody that might be listening who is out of work or who doesn't feel as though there sort of is a light at the end of the tunnel in the events world, that there is, and that I'm seeing it every day, and that the hotel industry is back, and meetings are back, and people are ready to go back to meeting in person.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you so much for that. Sure. Thank you. Thank you. If people would like to connect you with you, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on LinkedIn, which is Jim Klapes is my last name, which is C-L-A-P-E-S.
Well, and we'll have it on the thing. They'll see. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know.
Yes.
I just always have to spell out my name because nobody understands how to pronounce it usually. I understand. Although you were
I got it right first. The first time
I got it. You did. You came out the gate and you got it right. Take a look at the M3 Meet website, which is the company that I currently plan for, or take a look at the LGBT Meeting Professionals website. Again, LGBTMPA.com. And you can find me there.
Thank you. I'm so glad I found you. We connected on LinkedIn. So
yeah. I'm glad you found me too. This has been such a treat. It's been fun.
Oh, thank you. You're so welcome. It was my pleasure. Thank you to our listeners. If you've gotten this far, you've gotten more gems than most people get in a day. You've gotten more gems and gems.
And more gems and gems. There you go.
And nice. Gems I like and gems. That. Yes.
That's why she's an actress. She's
that's got, right. That's right. I'm here. I'm here for you. You know what? If you like events, if you love events, or even if you loathe events, tell someone about this podcast, please. And remember, whatever you speak about, remember to be speaking of events. Thank you, Jim Klapes.
Thank you, Carrie. This has been awesome.
Speaking of Events is sponsored by Ovation, the gold standard for professional presence and speaker development training, helping everyone get prepared, get confident, and get ovation.